issue. But they're saying, these transactions are a bit strange. Therefore, block it is fine. However, I am broke, and I kind of need these access to this money. Otherwise, I can't like interact with the situation here. And they're saying, oh, you have to come back to the UK and unlock it in an ATM or a bank branch. And I'm thinking, yep, that's suboptimal, mate. Do you know what I mean?
It is.
It is suboptimal. But what can you do, mate? What can you do? Anyway, I think I'm all right because the last money I had, I managed to spend it on one of these multi-day travel tickets or whatever. And I think I've got one more day on it, and that should be able to get me to the airport tomorrow. So I should be okay.
Dear, good luck.
Anyway, there we go.
Or else you'll just need to you'll need to get, become a Spanish citizen and get a job.
I may need to stay here and get a job because I simply can't leave. Anyway, welcome everybody to Brain Food Lab on Air, bringing it to you every Friday, no fail. I'm super excited to be chatting with you today because we're talking about a topic. I actually gave a talk on yesterday, which is like, okay, how do we actually assess recruiters? How do we know a recruiter's any good? And this was started off inspired by a post that Tim Sackett posted a couple of months ago, a couple of weeks ago. And he mentioned something about the absolute number of, like, the minimum number of LinkedIn connections an experienced recruiter should have. And he made the statement that he would be very suspicious of an experienced recruiter that had, 200 odd connections. Like, why would that connection number be so low for someone who had been working in recruiting for 4 or 5 years and stuff? And I agree with him. I think that that is weird. And I think that I'd probably consider that to be a significant red flag. Like, why are they not building network? Why have they not done this? And it'd be an area for us to explore. So that got me thinking about what are the ways in which we can tell a recruiter any good before we actually hire them. So I don't want to hear about, yes, we worked with them before, et cetera, et cetera. You don't know this person. You've only got to work on CV, online profile, or something else. How do you know they're any good? Because we're making decisions on hiring these folks. That is the topic of Brain Food Lab today. Anyway, folks, a quick bit of housekeeping as usual. I just want to make sure everyone can hear me okay. So just checking in on the folks on Crowdcast. I see the stream buzzing away, which is fantastic. Hope everyone's enjoying the sun. But let me know if you can hear me okay. Just let me give me a comment in the chat stream there. Let me know whether the audio is fine. We should be broadcasting this everywhere. So LinkedIn, if you can hear me on LinkedIn, folks, let me know. Drop me a comment or something of that type, and let me know whether the audio is okay there. Also live on Facebook and Twitter, I believe. So yeah, hopefully you can hear me there in those places. All right, quick word to our sponsors, everybody. We need to give our thanks to our sponsors every week. This show is sponsored by amazing companies, and without them, essentially, we can't run it. So please, kind of raise your hands and to our sponsors this week, HiPeople.io. They are a talent intelligence platform. I think they focus on reference checking, but they're expanding into all other kinds of talent intelligence. So do make sure you check them out if you want to basically get better validation before you make your hire. This is all about information that's going to support better hiring decisions. I think they're coming out of Germany, but they're expanding everywhere. HiPeople.io, check them out if you haven't got that solution. Okay, let's get on with the show. Adam Gordon, welcome back to the show. It's been a little bit of a hiatus, 2 weeks, I think. You've been away, haven't you?
Yeah, I have. I feel like a fish out of water. It's been quite a long time. Quite a long time.
It feels
Two
that way.
weeks.
Yeah, because
Yeah,
you
it
kind
does. It
of
feels
feel.
longer than that.
It might be 3 because it's I think Vanessa's stepped in admirably, by the way, because I got kicked off last week. It was like really embarrassing, and she
Yeah.
managed to just carry it on amazingly well. So
So another downgrade week today then with me back on.
yeah, absolutely lowballing it, mate. But anyway, good to have you on the show, and yeah, let's dive into it. Did you read the newsletter last week? And if so, what was interesting, man?
Yeah, I did. And the very first thing that I found interesting was your comment about posts on the Recruiting Brainfood job board.
Yep. Collapsed, mate. Collapsed.
Down 400%.
Yep.
I wonder what on earth is happening. So, certainly I can see that, there's all the evidence is that there's a global recession. We're either in it or we're about to, you know, it's about to be announced we're in it, because it's all about, I think it's two quarters of economic decline. That technically means a recession, right?
So, correct.
I suspect that we probably are. And there are companies that are clearly, I mean, this company's making, got hiring freezes on left, right, and center. So, you know, there's not been any panic, really. There's not been any, like, there's not been mass layoffs, I don't think. But certainly, I know quite a lot of companies that have got hiring freezes on. A lot of my customers have. Like, you know, sales prospects that I'm talking to, they have as well. So hiring recruiters, is that top priority right now? Recruiters have gone from being like the most inflated, you know, highest inflation for salaries. Everybody's made their job moves, have they? I don't know. A lot of people have. Probably most people here have made a job move in the last 12 months, I would think.
Mate, I did write a post last year around about October, and I said, if you want, now is the time to quit your recruiter job and get another one, because the golden era is not going to last forever. Now, I did expect it to last longer than it has, because it's really only been about 12 months. And we were still flying early Q1 this year. But I think Russian invasion of Ukraine has really destroyed any kind of feeling that we're going to bounce back in any kind of a significant way, and that's fed into inflation. That's fed into basically a lot of just a seeping away of confidence. And yeah, lots of, I would beg to differ on layoffs. Lots of tech companies are laying people off. I spoke to a recruiter yesterday in Barcelona for an event. He turned up. He's all badged up, right, with his company. He got laid off while he was at the conference. And it was like, yep, that's happened. Literally didn't know anything about it. Came to represent the business. Boom. And he was knocked out. So I think it's starting to happen. Let me know, folks, what do you think? Are we, as the golden era for recruiters, actually over? And the signal we have, I have, is essentially a collapse in the volume of job posting on Brainfood Job Board. Job board's been 40 plus jobs consistently, week in, week out. It's collapsed down to 9. And I think it's going to stay that way, maybe even go lower than that. So we'll see sort of where we go. I'd love to know what you think. Are you seeing essentially a hiring freeze for your team and potentially hiring freeze for the rest of your business?
Tim's point's massively valid. It's not just for recruiters, of course. It's for all sorts of professions. But he said a lot of overpaid recruiters are in for a correction. Like, if you're sitting there on $100,000 a year when, like, this time last year, somebody sitting in your seat was on 65, you know, when it comes to looking at, right, how are we going to cut costs around here, you might stand out. I mean, this is not just for recruiters, of course. It's for everybody. It's for me. It's probably for Han. I don't know.
No, everybody. Yeah, mate, I'm not overpaid. I'm not paid at all. That's my problem.
It's not that, you know, the Ukraine, the invasion of Ukraine, you know, a lot of people sitting on the other side of the world from Ukraine might go, what the hell's that got to do with me? But the knock-on effects are, like, in terms of cost rises in every, you know, in agriculture, in oil and gas, in all these other areas, is a problem for everyone.
Yeah, it's not just the invasion. It's basically the massive sanctions being leveled on Russia. And Russia is a massive commodity producer. It's a massive energy producer. And if the way I describe it is also something called hostile deglobalization. So if you're going to literally chaotically and adversarially deglobalize, then essentially all of the companies that are being valued at billions plus are basically being valued on the idea that there is a global market. And if you're now saying, actually, there's not a global market, there's a regional market only, guess what? All of those valuations are completely out of whack. So the correction is not only going to be recruiters, it's going to be market-wide, global market-wide. So it's going to be like heavy, heavy sledding for a lot of us, I think. Anyway, topic for another time, perhaps. Give me another one, Adam.
Yeah, I enjoyed the article that kind of gave some context around LinkedIn's data about in-mail responses.
Yes.
Didn't make much sense to me, quite a lot of it. So
tell me.
It said, for example, that people reaching out, if you're reaching out from an accommodation. I don't know whether it was an accommodation organization or your profession was accommodation. I'm not sure which of those it was. But you're going to get a 23% higher than average response to your email results. Whereas if you're in real estate, which to me sounds like exactly the same thing, you're going to get the worst. You're going to get a 10% or the second worst, I think it was, like 10% lower than average. So, I mean, it's interesting to go and have a look. I'm not sure whether there's anything meaningful in that. The one that I thought was total fake news was if you are reaching out to people with a human resources like title, they're more likely to respond 26% above the average in mail. I'm thinking like, HR people probably respond about 0.01% of the time. So that, what does that say about in mail results if that's the case? I can't imagine that. Accountancy, they said, were the bottom, or accounting professionals was the bottom, 17% less likely than average to respond to your message. But HR being at the top, I'm not, unless this is unsolicited, like I'm sending you a message to say, I'm up for working at your company. What do I do? Maybe that's it. But do job seekers do that?
Who knows? I would be interested to know sort of what the how they work the numbers out, because accountants and most people are basically not on LinkedIn at all. So you're literally sending to a moribund account. And I just wonder if there's any kind of uplift on HR and recruiters, let's say, it's because we are on it all the time. So even if we ignore 99 of emails coming through, our response to one of them is still maybe a little bit higher than someone who just logs in every month. You know, you must be just like the inbox of someone who logs in every month on LinkedIn must just be unworkable. Like it just be a complete sort of a stream of nonsense you're never going to get through. So
yeah.
So anyway, LinkedIn occasionally produce some decent content. And like I say, it's brain food. I agree with you, Adam. Can't learn too much from it, but dive in, take a look. You know, if you're on emails and you want to get better at it, I guess this is something that's worth at least exploring and giving some thought towards it.
I mean, definitely interesting to look at. So if you're doing emails and you want to get better at it, then you might also want to get better at your TikTok posts. So when to post on TikTok. I really enjoyed Hootsuite's sort of pressy of what you should do and what you shouldn't do. The best time to post on TikTok, the very best time of the whole week, 7 p.m. on a Thursday. I wonder why that is. Is it people are like, it's near the end of the week, more people are going on TikTok, it's Friday tomorrow, I don't need to work tonight because like tomorrow's a like bit of a lazy day for me, you know, that type of thing. I wonder.
Who knows? TikTok is so addictive though. People look at it all the time. I mean, I wonder whether the timing of it, is it that relevant? Because essentially it's like I'm sure people who are on TikTok literally look at it 20 times a day. It's right in your mobile, it's entertaining, blasting 5 minutes, and it's like, yeah, amazing. So who knows?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, I mean, I wouldn't say I'm addicted to it. I only go on it when somebody sends me a link and says, take a look at this, TikTok.
All I can say is keep scrolling, Adam, and you'll eventually see stuff that you think, oh, that's interesting. And it'll basically, it's got a very good way of tracking your view time. So if you view something for like 2 seconds longer than something else, it'll say, oh, Adam's interested in this type of content, and it'll surface more of that stuff to you. And eventually you'll get, oh my God, I'm totally into this, no matter what it is.
I mean, like Aaron's point on the chat here is absolutely right. So like, I think anybody over the age of probably about 30, I think they definitely take a bit longer to, on average, they'll take a bit longer to get with, you know, something like a TikTok that's like quite new. It's for a generation before.
Yeah, but you get it. I think it depends on
It depends on the area you're recruiting in. So if I'm recruiting engineers, I'm probably not spending a lot of time on TikTok. But if I'm recruiting retail or hospitality or something like that, I think I may be spending a little bit, you know, contact centers, you know, it's full of teenagers who are, you know, I'm quite likely to be able to hire into those types of roles, more likely than somebody in their 40s who's on Facebook.
Yeah. I think generally speaking, it's going to be something you can really do good stuff in terms of branding and storytelling on. But is it going to be something you could source from? Probably not. Could you engage people? Definitely. Target market. You know, if your content is out there and you're doing a consistent thing, you'll draw a certain audience that works out for you. So one of the things I've seen really that work on TikTok, for instance, is people giving Excel tips. So they're just doing like 60-second, not even 60 seconds, like 20-second videos. Say, hey, here's how you do Excel quickly, and it'll show you one way to do it. And it's like, well, if you're on spreadsheets all the time, that actually is a useful account to follow. And that is therefore a good recruiting thing. So someone could do Boolean search on that. I think Greg Hawks does a bit of this actually. Check out Greg Hawks, by the way. I think he's very good at YouTube, generally very good on TikTok as well. So he produces something that I think is as close as I've seen it so far to an effective recruiting channel on TikTok. So worth having a look.
I mean, one thing I've got to say about TikTok is the amount of creativity on there is phenomenal. Like people just got a phone and they're creating amazing stuff. It's really inspiring to see what some people do, but it's also really concerning to see how much time people spend on making this stuff. That Tom's also made a good comment, which is that he said, or an intriguing comment, he showed that he's got the attention span of a gnat. Now, does that mean that actually it's the perfect place for him? Because that's the attention span you need to really continue to enjoy that, because you're going from one thing to the other, or he's got no patience for it. I'm not sure what that means, but could be either.
Get into it. I'm a fan of TikTok. I think it's worth doing. Anyway, give us one more. Have we done three, or are you going to give us one more? And then
let's do one more because you put two like companion bits of brain food about it. Remote work's killing big offices and cities as a result. I was in New York last week, and the place does not look like it used to. Apparently, according to one of the articles that you shared, 8% of New Yorkers or New York workers are back in the office 5 days a week compared to before the pandemic. And it really shows the place is very, very different. One example of that is you can drive around New York, right? I didn't drive, but I was in a car with somebody, with one of my colleagues who was driving. You can drive around New York. It wasn't a problem at all. There was not the car park of yellow taxis like you used to see. It's totally, totally changed. The type of people that are in New York, it's quite different as well. It's obviously attracted a lot of people who have the pandemic's not been good to them. So I mean, there's clearly, there's a lot more. I mean, there's always been substance abusers in big cities, in every big city, in London and everywhere. But there's clearly more people that are like drunk or on drugs than I've seen in New York ever before. And I feel like it's also things like roads and stuff like that. It's quite shabby compared to what it used to be. But then when you consider 25% of the city's tax came from commercial real estate and nobody's in there,
it's a problem.
So cities have absolutely got to reinvent themselves, because it's not going to come back in the way it was.
However,
I was also in iSIMS HQ in New Jersey. It used to have 1,000 iSIMS people in it. I walked around the office, introduced myself to everybody in about an hour and a half, and that was like 40 people probably out of
just rolling around in a beautiful office with very few people in it. That's like expensive real estate that's simply getting massively underutilized. And by the way, I noticed the infrastructure as well in New York. Like the roads were surprisingly knackered, to be fair. It looked like, it's like that city seen slightly better days. So hopefully, I think you're right. A lot of these cities depend on not only commercial real estate taxation, but also office economy, also night economy, people like spending money there. And again, I think this is why politically you see a lot of consensus, the politicians saying get back to the office, and you know, the workers saying no. So it's an interesting, and I think one of the defining conflicts we're going to have in terms of how it's all going to play out for us. All right, listen, let's get on with the show, because we're talking about it. We're talking about how to know a recruiter is any good, and I want us to be able to talk about this in a frank and honest manner. So one of the things that's annoying about sort of conversation in recruiting over the last couple of years, I feel, is that we've lost the ability to speak frankly, and we seem to be frightened about making statements, and you know, terrified about this being honest and saying, look, you know, gut feel, that's how I make a decision. So how do you know if a recruiter is any good? Like, without knowing him, without knowing her, you just have a profile. What are you looking for that tells you this person is generally going to be the right person? We're not saying hire a person. We're going to bring them in. We're going to assess, et cetera, but on the surface, what are you looking out for?
So there's at least 10 different types of recruiters, right? There's agency recruiters who are sales-led agency recruiters. There's executive search, you know, executive search consultants. There's then in-house, there's people who do volume, and mostly what they're doing is advertising and building assessment centers and an automated assessment process as much as possible. Then there's people who are like 360 degree recruiters, either in-house or external. They've got to be a Swiss Army knife. There's talent sourcers who have got to be like, you know, focused on looking under all the different rocks. There's so many different types. So it's a new, really, really nuanced subject.
So no, what you've just said there, quite important, is that you need to know what kind of recruiter you're looking for then, because it might well be that's your first thing to think about. You can't just say that is a good recruiter. You got to think, is that a good sourcer, or is that a good recruitment marketer, or is that person particularly good at organizing the projects? They may be totally different. They are totally different activities, and they are oftentimes different roles within a company. So firstly, understand what the need is, and then you can move on from there. Cool. All right. Yeah. Listen, let's talk about it. Let's bring on these guests.
Just generally, if you know what type of recruiter you're looking for, you want to be asking them what their thoughts are about a particular type of subject that is like you would expect that person to know all about it. So if you're hiring a talent sourcer and you want an experienced talent sourcer, like tell us about that. Tell me about your experience in using different tools and where do you and channels and write me out some Boolean strings, but like. You got to know the logic behind all of that. You got to know how to X-ray websites. You got to, you know, and if that person can't keep up with that type of conversation, they're probably not going to be great at that. They might have the raw skills to learn it, but they're not going to come in as an experienced hire. So
that's actually a really good point. You can qualify it by conversation and how fluent they are on that particular topic. So they need to know things. Recruitment marketer, for instance, they need to know what programmatic advertising is. They need to know how that landscape works. They need to know about sort of those types of, basically one layer below the activities. What do you want this person to do? They should speak fluently on those things. A good thing to think about. Okay, let's bring on some of our guests. Let's talk about it. I think they've all recruited before, or currently recruiters. So we'll see what's what. We're going to bring on Erin Matthew. A return for Erin Matthew, I believe, long time since she's been on the show. Ed Han makes the debut. And of course, Tim Sackett. Where is Tim? He's coming on because he has basically, he's the fire starter for this conversation. I can't find him. Where is he?
Hi, Erin.
Hello, Adam. Long time no talk.
Oh, there's Erin. Hey, how are you?
I'm good.
Great to see you, Erin. How are things?
Great. I don't think I've been on Brain Food in like a year and a half almost, and a lot of changes. I moved, had a baby, and you know, changed jobs, a lot of different things.
That's right. Because I was conscious of the fact, obviously, your family is happening and stuff like this. So I was thinking, okay, you know, maybe not the perfect time to interrupt Erin with that. We should be busy with other stuff. But great that we were able to chat online and get you back, because you're a very popular guest here, Erin. Having said that, she's kind of I've lost the video here. Okay, we've got Ed Han with us. Ed, how are you doing? Good. Welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, Hung. Appreciate the invitation. Cool. Good morning or good afternoon.
Great,
in your case, I suppose.
And Tim Sackett, of course. Great to see you, Tim.
Hey, Hung.
Great stuff. Okay, very quick, some intros for all of you guys. For people who don't know, Erin, would you like to go first? Would you like to introduce who you are, what it is you do?
Yeah, so the last time that I was on Braid Food, I was managing a sourcing team at Maxar Technologies in the aerospace industry. Since then, I have changed jobs. I decided management was not for me. I prefer to be a sourcer that is in the weeds doing all the fun, cool search methods. I can't say the name of my company because I didn't have enough time to get clearance to use it on this webcast, but it's pretty bit easy to figure out if you go to my LinkedIn profile. But I am now in the fintech space and it's very awesome, enjoying it so far. Yes, so I am back to being an individual contributor and loving it.
Great to have you back, Erin. Okay, Ed, can you tell us quickly who you are and what it is you do, sir?
Sure, absolutely. I'm a corporate recruiter. Spent the last 10 years and change in recruiting after a host of other stuff, which quite frankly has been really great prep for this. Chiefly, I really am recruiting along technology adjacent roles and also strangely enough, HR.
Great to have you on the show, Ed. And Tim, a few folks that don't know you, but in case they're under a rock and they've, you know, not been paying attention, quickly, who are you? What it is you do?
I write blog posts every day just to try to get Hung to share it on Brain Food. That's really my sole purpose in life. I just and I hope and I pray that Hung reads and he shares it. There you go.
That's it. I'm pleased that we managed to kind of the dovetail our way into this and get you back onto the show. Okay, Tim. let's talk about the thing that you started, Tim. A controversial take, which I agreed with, even though I might have exaggerated your particular position in order to kind of illustrate what we're talking about. But can you be crude in, and is it a decent crude rule to look at LinkedIn connection numbers when you're looking at an experienced recruiter? Is it weird, for instance, that there is a lower number than you expect? And take it to the further extreme, what happens when you encounter an experienced recruiter that doesn't have a LinkedIn profile? Is that weird? At what point do we start thinking that's strange? We need to investigate it. Let's go hang on, Tim. I'm going to go to Erin with this first.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that last part.
Oh,
audio cut out.
No worries. I just wanted to know whether you think we can make some crude rule of thumb type judgments on someone's LinkedIn connection numbers, particularly if they're an experienced recruiter and it's kind of a low number. What do you think?
Okay, so I'm going to say no with the caveat that yes, it does arouse some suspicion with me. And I say this only as someone who used to have very few connections that had been a recruiter for years. My very first recruiting role that I spent several years in, they gave us one resource to find candidates and source them. And that was Indeed. Nobody had LinkedIn recruiter seats. Nobody really knew about the capability of using LinkedIn. And I would say as a recruiter, I can't believe this, but I used to get on maybe every 3 months to my account. And it was to update my profile. And I really thought that that was all it was. It wasn't until I got so bored working for that company. And really, I don't know, we didn't have to do as much sourcing because we got a lot of applicants. And I was bored out of my mind doing that. And that's when I, you know, insisted to my employer, you got to let me go to SourceCon. And I went into that conference thinking I knew everything about recruiting, only to find out that I knew absolutely nothing about recruiting and sourcing. And actually, Tim, you were a presenter at that at that conference.
The infamous
time that I went. And yeah, I'll never forget the time that you got up there and said Indeed is dead. And I was like, did he really just say that? But yeah, a lot of the things that I learned there made me have a much more active presence on LinkedIn and other platforms outside of that. So I'm glad that another employer took a chance on me as a sourcer with so few connections so that I could grow into a role where I was much more present on the platform. So that is the only reason why I would say no, but still, that's not the case for everybody. So.
Yeah. So what, just to restate your position there, Aaron, it's basically, you're saying that it doesn't, it's not a verdict on the character of the person per se, or the potential that person has, but it may be that their initial environment, let's say, was so constrained, the way in which they were taught how to do recruiting had actually put them in a kind of a narrow box in terms of how to operate. And they needed that box to be opened up in some way, which in your case was this this event at SourceCon, and an eye opener. And I do kind of resonate a huge amount with that. I remember the first event I went to as an experienced recruiter, 9 years in. I saw Alan Whitford speak. Rest in peace, Alan, by the way. He was just opened my eyes completely in terms of how basically social networking was working. I thought, you know what, I know nothing about what I was doing 9 years in. So it may just simply be a lack of opportunity to open your mind is the thing there. Don't mind. So what are your thoughts on that, Ed? How do you feel about this idea of putting a rule on LinkedIn connections?
I don't love it. Truth is, you know, I mean, when I first, like I said before, I've done a lot of other stuff before I came to recruiting. By the time I came to recruiting, LinkedIn was already a very well-known tool, heavily used by a lot of people anyway, right? Mm. Like I said, I've only been doing it for 10 years and change, you know? So to me, that has always been part of the fabric, part of the character of what we do for a living, yeah? But here's the thing, how is anyone going to know, right? I mean, it only shows you your network size to you, yourself. So unless you are voluntarily disclosing it, no one's ever going to know unless you have actually fewer than 500 connections. It's the only way to know this.
But that's the question. I mean, if you saw someone at 358 sort of connections, you would know, because it would say that. And would that not be weird if they had 10 years in, like right now, if that 10 years experience from 2010 to 2022, that's weird, isn't it?
Sure. I understand the question, but you know, the thing is, at the end of the day, don't we care about the results? Aren't we more interested in, did we fill the recs? Is that person that the hiring manager selected progressing in the organization, right? You know, at the end of the day, isn't that the real KPI for what we do? You know, at least as individual contributors in TA. And to me, if you can achieve that to me is the essential thing. And it also is dependent on what skill set you're talking about, right? I mean, if you're doing HR, biz dev, sales, marketing folks, yes, that would be really profoundly weird. I absolutely agree with that, you know. But my first job in recruiting, I was recruiting electrical technicians, you know, residential technicians, your cable guys. These guys are not on LinkedIn, right? So if I specialize in that space, if I specialize in medical professionals, you know, MDs, nurses, and the like, if I specialized in logistics and shipping, again, skill sets you do not find on LinkedIn for the most part. If that's your focus, then absolutely I buy not even having a profile, frankly.
Yeah, I think that's very valid. So that's a really important point. Industry sector relevant, right? So basically LinkedIn is pretty much white collar work. And if you're hiring people that don't sit in front of a computer, then it may not be a relevant product for you. It may well be there's other products out there you need to use. Adam, you about to say something?
Well, it was really the only point I was going to make was actually what Ed just said. If your profession is recruiting cockle pickers, you are not going to be, spending a lot of time in offices networking with people in white collar jobs.
Mm-hmm. That's true. And Daniel Deer, I would actually say thousands unknown is definitely superior than 358 well known. I think quantity is definitely better than quality on LinkedIn. I'll die in that particular ditch, folks. Okay, Tim, go back to you. You started the conversation. Can you explain the context that caused you to write that post? Because I think it was a real situation, wasn't it, Tim?
Yeah, we were actually going through and hiring a bunch of recruiters like everybody else, right? And over an extended period of time. So like, let's say like the last 12 months, so you've gone through, interviewed, hired, seen performance, had turnover, you know, blah, blah, blah. we tend to actually hire a lot of entry levels and train. Ed, I don't disagree with you saying, hey, shouldn't we be measuring mm-hmm. performance? Tell me how you measure the performance of a recruiter in an interview coming from another company when you can't validate any of that data. So that was the issue, right? So when somebody comes to me in the interview and they're an experienced recruiter and they're like, oh my gosh, Tim, I love recruiting. Recruiting's my life. I'm a nerd. I'm a recruiting nerd. And I'm like, cool. Tell me, how do you educate yourself? Why do you have 276 followers on LinkedIn? Who do you read Recruiting Brain Food? How do you get, and they're just like, well, I've been recruiting for 10 years and I show up to work every day. Great. Good for you. That tells me nothing, right? I'm not saying that having over 500 also tells me something. What I'm saying is under 500 tells me you're a liar, that you don't recruit, right? That you don't even know. Because even if I'm saying that, hey, I recruit cockle pickers, at the very end, I want recruiters who are going to develop themselves. And when you develop yourselves, you create a network like Aaron found at SourceCon. You go out there and you connect with other recruiters, other sourcers, people that are going to teach you and give you all of that information. And if I just connected with the recruiters in my own city, I'm over 500, right? I mean, that's like a bare minimum of me just developing myself.
Yeah, no, there is one other sort of
Adam, they're liars. They're liars, so, Adam. No, they're no, liars.
I mean, they're goddamn liars. I can tell you for a fact that the people who go into recruitment and they work in smaller organizations are going to be much better networked externally than those people that went in and started their career at Hays or at Michael Page or at one of these organizations with big walls up around it. They've got their own internal learning and development programs. They've got their own. They don't want you going and making friends with other people in recruitment. They don't encourage you to go to the networking events and the source cons and things like that. They want to keep you absolutely behind that brick wall.
I just asked myself,
didn't want me to go to SourceCon, that employer that I was with.
Wow.
I actually fought my way to go. Because I actually had been asking to go for years. They kept saying no. And then one month they decided to reward a few handpicked recruiters with tickets to SourceCon. And I was seeing red after that meeting. So I went home. I said, I'm going to write those damn 6 blogs. I'm going to earn my ticket. And then I went to my boss's office the next day. I said, I'm writing these blogs. I'm taking PTO to go if I have to, and I'm paying my own way, and that's how it's going to be. And then I got sourced after someone read my articles, and I ended up going to SourceCon with a different company. But they did not.
That's why they didn't want you to go.
Yeah. I love it. Much deserved. Well done. Well done, you, Aaron. But I do remember this. Like, a lot of companies essentially have this idea that if your recruiter's going to the event, they're spreading intellectual IP. They're kind of, potentially loose tongues and losing opportunities and all this type of stuff. It's like, no, keep in internally. I think that was back in the day. I hope this type of attitude is
not
scared
of the secret sauce of what we do. Oh,
yeah. Exactly. I think the majority of recruiters are still that way. I mean, because we're not in that space, we've moved beyond it, and we're kind of circulating in spaces that are much more open. We might, in a paradoxical sense, be in our own type of bubble, so to speak, whereas the majority of the industry might still be pretty much locked in to company brand.
That are locked in, though, there's a way that you can tell if someone has an aptitude for building a network that big. And I know it when I see it whenever I interview a sourcer. If you tell them what else is out there, do their eyes get wide with excitement, or are they a little bit taken aback by it? That's going to tell you a lot. Yeah. You know, because there's people that are just like fascinated by it and can't wait to get in there and figure out what, you know, what they know and what they don't know. And then some people are like, that's a little bit out there for me. I'm just going to go where I'm comfortable. And I see a lot of that. You know, I truly believe that some people are just hardwired to be sourcers. And I've seen it on rare occasions, but I know it when I see it.
Yeah. I went into an enterprise like TA. I'm working with a TA team as enterprise, and about 145 recruiters. And we did a survey asking them, like, we already knew the data around source of hire, right? And they don't do probably 90% of what they hire for are going to be what we'd say is either semi-skilled, low-skilled, hourly, but higher end. And then the other 10-15% are going to be salaried. Big LinkedIn shop. Source of hire wasn't even in the top five for LinkedIn. But when you ask them, like, hey, what's the thing if we took away, you would want to quit or go to work someplace else? It was LinkedIn, because they were spending all day, every day on LinkedIn. To Aaron's point, like, they didn't have all these other sources. They didn't really think, like, figure out, like, how to go through. And again, this company's like struggling to hire. And it's like, well, I know why you're struggling to hire is because you got a bunch of recruiters on LinkedIn all day that shouldn't be there. But, you know, that's just the reality of what a lot of us face.
Yep. So there's two really important points both you and Aaron have just made there. I just want to address real quick Aaron's point about asking a question and seeing the reaction, right? Seeing the reaction. You're not looking necessarily for the person to give you any kind of content, but are they thrilled to discuss other ways to recruit? And if you get kind of that kind of enthusiasm, then enthusiasm should translate into extra effort, if you like, you know, extra, you know, the just more motivation to uncover those things. And I think that aligns with Tim's point on the example he cited about the recruiter that was, you know, the job a day type of person. Absolutely, there's a role for that individual. They can come in and just do the job 9 to 5. That's totally fine. That is what you pay for. That's great. But are they going to be great at your business? Are they going to be great recruiters? Maybe not. You know, maybe that person isn't living it in such a way that some people are. And if you have the choice between the two, you know, you'd always go with the person that has that more greater intrinsic motivation, I guess. So, but LinkedIn, by the way, I think the numbers on connections and stuff, that's a proxy for motivation, is I think Tim's point, which is kind of disguised by my overstating it and then sort of further confused by Tim's seriously overstating it with his irrational outbursts on screen. I want to sit in a little bit more with this idea of the sort of questions you can ask a candidate that you don't know and you don't have validation. You're literally trying to do an interview. What other questions are good ones to use when you're trying to figure out whether the recruiter is any good? Any thoughts on this? Ed, I'll lean on you a little bit on this. Have you ever recruited anyone or been participating in the recruitment of other recruiters? And if so, what sort of questions do you think are effective? Yes.
So years ago, when I was still in the agency world, I was recruiting a team. I was a recruiting manager. First time being a hiring manager in a long time. And I was absolutely gobsmacked at the poor quality of resumes I was seeing. Absolutely mind-boggled.
Press Ed, what is a poor quality resume? Tell me about what it looks like.
It tells me about responsibilities. You know, basically it's a collection of the blandest bullets you've ever seen on every JD for a recruiter, ever, right? Manage X number of requirements. Okay, great, whatever. That tells me nothing. What do I care? I care about what did you deliver? What did you accomplish? Show me the results, because otherwise the rest is utter garbage.
You wanted to say show me the money there, didn't you? You wanted to say that.
Show me the money.
I thought about it. All right. Yeah, so results. Yeah.
Beyond resume, yeah. Ed, when you got them to interview, what was the question that you were asking them?
Oh, I would give them a JD and ask them to devise a Boolean string. Just one.
Okay.
Your average recruiter could not do that?
Like not incorporate, yeah.
What, 4% of recruiters maybe could do that?
Yeah, it proved to be quite the challenge.
But that may be a legit test. Like if you're looking for a sourcer, someone with a sourcing skill set, that's your job. I think it's fair to say, look, write me a basic Boolean string that will generate some results from this from Google rather than LinkedIn. So in other words, use a non-specialist tool to try and get some candidate data. Can you do that? Yes, no. And I think that is a decent screen away from a bunch of people that probably are not suitable to do the sourcing role. Folks, let me know in the comments, what do you think? Is it fair to test a recruiter to say, whiteboard it out, give me some sort of Boolean strings? Is that a fair assessment?
For a sourcer, yeah. I mean, that would be like, you'd expect about 50% of talent sourcers to be able to do that. 50% of talent sourcers are not really doing proper sourcing, but the ones who are, they should all know how to do that. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's not even necessarily a knockout question. It can be a question to gauge where they are with their skills, and that can tell you how much work you're going to have to invest in mentoring that person. Because like I said, I used to be a sourcer that didn't know Boolean. I know Boolean now, but one of my favorite questions to ask a sourcer in an interview is, what is your favorite Boolean operator? And it tells me a lot if I get the answer, is that like and or a not? And that's a big tip off right there. Not necessarily a knockout question, like I said, but if they have a good answer for that, I'm like, okay, I know a little bit about how they think. And then my other question is always, where is the strangest place that you have found a candidate? And I get some really cool answers from that usually.
Nice, nice. And you can get some creative sort of thinking, can't you? And people who have done it or remember stories of that type, I think would be able to recount that and answer that question well.
Yeah. And are they excited to tell me the story? That
exactly
tells me if they have a passion for sourcing.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. Okay, Tim, how about you? By the way, folks, if you're listening in on this show, what is your favorite question that you want to ask a candidate for a recruiting job? I'd love you to populate the chat stream with your favorite question, because it might be cool to actually assemble a list of these things. Tim, you've already talked about how you interview people and what your thoughts were.
Yeah, yeah.
Can you give us some extra flavor on that? Like, what are the other questions you think are pretty juicy?
Yeah, so the one that I gave was, like, tell me how you develop yourself as a recruiter. It speaks volumes to me about what you care about the profession. If you're passionate about the profession, I want to know if it's just showing up and doing the job. You could be great, but that doesn't show me as someone who is like a lifelong learner who wants to be better at the profession. The other one is, I want to talk about the relationship that you develop with hiring managers. So talk to me about a hiring manager that, you know, that you had struggled with, or that you had a negative relationship with, and how you turn that around. Or just how do you continue to develop, you know, relationships with the hiring managers to get what you need from them, because it's such a critical part of what we do.
Yep, excellent. So basically get into site examples of one of the key things that you have to do, which is stakeholder management. So I think spooling this all the way back, number one rule, what kind of recruiter you're looking for. Number two rule, whatever that role is, have a go a bit deeper into the activities and just ask questions which will either sort of, and you're watching for a response. Are they excited? Are they enthusiastic? Are they able to provide the sort of answers an enthusiastic person would be able to provide? So there's a bit of a pattern in terms of how we might address some of these things. Oh, folks, we always do this, by the way, just quick stop press. Let's make sure that the conversation on this topic continues even after we go off air. Brain Food Live is a great show because everyone gets involved. But please don't let us be the bottleneck stopping the conversation if you want to continue after we go off air. So take a moment, take your LinkedIn profile and share it in the chat stream, or share it in the LinkedIn thread, or share it in the Facebook thread or Twitter thread, and just connect with everyone else that you see posting those links. Last thing that we should all kind of walk away from is at least 50, 60 more friends and connections on LinkedIn.
As you finally get above 500. Yes.
As you know, exactly. No excuse to be under 500, folks. If you're a recruiter under 500, there's no excuse. Get your LinkedIn shared in there and blast it out and get those connections built. There we go. Good to see all that happening. Let's have a look at sort of the what's your thoughts on extending the work trial? So Ed, you talked about the Boolean string. What about like giving them some extra stuff to do? Would you say, hey, listen, here's a requirement, go and like find me some kind of like live candidates? Would you do that? Do you think that's fair to do? Would you get them to make calls? Would you get them to write emails? Like, do you think it's fair to actually get them to do a bit of work?
I think so. You said go ahead. Ed, not Aaron. No, I'm sorry,
Aaron,
go ahead.
No, that's okay. Aaron, go ahead, answer it.
Okay, so I think it is fair to get them to do a little bit of work. I like to see how they calibrate a search, what kind of information they need to get a search started. But most of all, what I like to do to challenge people is give them a topic, and I tell them, okay, you've got a month to research it, and then you have to present it to the team. that is the way that I learn the best. That's the way that my team learned the best. You know, I've given people topics like iterative search or search engines, anything, and they can take it in any direction they want to. And I've been pleasantly surprised every time.
Yeah. So that seems to me like the at the very end of a recruiting process, right? So when you're about to maybe make the offer, you'd get them to go away and do some stuff or come back.
Oh, during the interview process? No, I'm not going to make anyone do unpaid work.
Yeah. Okay. Got it.
But this would be early in their tenure as someone on my team.
Right. Got it. Okay, Ed, let's go to you. Thank you for that, Aaron. Ed, go to you. What's your attitude to getting them to do a little bit of work? I'm not saying like grind out, you know, 5 hours or whatever. Right. But, you know, would you put them in a live situation and say, okay, go and call some candidates?
No, not make calls. Like Aaron, I have some reservations about unpaid work. So it really depends on the kind of thing you're asking them to do, right? What's the ask? How much effort are you really asking? So for example, like the example I gave of like whiteboarding something, right? Whether that's a string or something of that kind, I'm okay with that. But actually sourcing or engaging candidates, I'm sorry, I just don't feel really good about that.
Fair enough. I think that's a fair question. How about you, Tim? You'd be up for it, wouldn't you?
Of course. Yeah, free work? Come on. Like
Make a placement, then you can join.
I made interns right now back in the warehouse. Are you kidding me? No. I actually, one of the last steps in our interview process is we hire a ton of recruiters. We hire a ton of recruiters that I say they're not recruiters, right? We actually teach them how to recruit. But one of the things I want to know is that are they inquisitive? Could they actually hold a conversation? So I actually say like, hey, the next step is, you know, pick your time, but you're going to call me for a half hour and you're going to interview me. Just you're I'm me. We're not role playing. You're just going to interview me to find out more about me. And that tells me a lot about their ability to connect and hold a natural conversation with somebody, from that standpoint. So, it's so specific to what we do, right? We have so many of these conversations with people every single week, every single day. Can they, and what I find is there's a good set of people out there that can naturally interview you and have a normal conversation and make you feel comfortable. And those, they tend to be good recruiters. Mm-hmm. If they can, you know, kind of get through the, you know, being able to do the process stuff.
This is a good point. So I think you can quite quickly tell, even if they're not a recruiter, who could make a good recruiter, because if they are, if they keep your attention and they are articulate, recruiters are good talkers, right? Yeah. Not necessarily sourcers. You don't need to be for it to be a sourcer or to be other jobs in recruitment. But if you're going to be interviewing people, you better be interested about the world and you better be interested in people, because that's you can pick that up in people quite quickly.
Well, Adam, you and I've had this conversation too. With the way technology is moving in talent acquisition, that tech stack, if you automate 80-85% of what a recruiter does now, at the end of the day, the future of recruiting is your ability to connect and get people to trust you with their career and have that conversation. That's it. It sounds old school, but like the technology is getting us back to having recruiters that actually have real conversations.
Yeah, it's achieving influence.
Yep.
It's achieving influence with hiring managers or customers if you're external, achieving influence with the candidates, and having the human conversations that take the person, which on whichever side it is, to the next step that you need them to get to. So you've got to be articulate and you've got to be gregarious.
I love the fact it's going back to the future. And Tim, I think you're absolutely correct. Sourcing as a period may have hit its golden age, so to speak, in the sense it was a manual kind of bunch of humans basically interrogating these online systems to try and pull out information. But guess what? Probably systems will be able to do that more efficiently in an automated way in due course. And we might end up going back to a situation where the primary skill set is that human to human connection. Final question on this, though. You mentioned, Adam, that the ability, I think, to influence someone is actually a core component. And same as some of you said, Tim, the ability to resonate with somebody. How do you test that in an interview situation? How can you test the ability of someone's ability to influence? Is there something you can do or a question you can ask that would be effective in that mechanism to test that trait? Let's go around everyone. Aaron, do you want to give this a shot first?
You're muted, Aaron.
Am I? Okay.
No, you're fine now.
I'm sorry. Can you repeat the question?
Yeah. So it's basically about influence being something that's an important trait in recruiters. How do you test for that? Is it a question you can ask? Is there something you can do in the interview process that would test for the ability to influence?
Sell me this pen.
Gosh, to
sell me this pen.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to get to.
Sell me this pen. Yeah.
That's where I'm trying to get to. But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I could. You could ask, you know, have you ever recruited on a role that most people would not find desirable? How did you convince someone to say this is the role for me? I had to do that quite a lot when I was working at FTD. We were a company that was going through a bankruptcy and going private equity, going through layoffs, but still hiring at the same time. So you had to use very specific language to get to someone that thrives in chaos. So the messaging that we used was, we need someone that can run into a burning building and put it out with nothing more than a bucket of water and the courage to rebuild it all. And you would be surprised at who responded to that messaging saying, tell me a little bit more about that.
So I guess what you're saying here, Aaron, is that you can do some scenario planning on it, and you can basically, and I guess that example is a really interesting one. When you're talking about, you know, how to frame what might be a difficult sell. And that in itself is a good example of influence, isn't it? So that's a super, super interesting thing to think about. I think a very hard to test for. So going to you, Ed, what are your thoughts on this? How do you test for influence? Is this impossible to do? Is it something we just got to hope for the best on when we make the hiring decision for a recruiter?
I don't think there's any hiring decision should ever be a hope for a best sort of situation. But having said that,
right?
I'll just roll some dice, man. Come on.
I'm a believer.
I am, however, a believer in behavioral questions, because obviously this is, you know, the best thing we have currently anyway. I love what Tim had been saying a few minutes earlier, you know, interview me, talk to me, what do you, and the ability to hold the conversation, the ability to find the logical follow-ons, right, that someone will drop something in passing, maybe, right, that, oh, that's very interesting. And I think those are really important. And following on from what Aaron had just said, you know, you want to get to someone's why, right? If you can get to someone's why and say, okay, I see what drives you. I want to speak to this. Yeah. I think if you can do that, then they'll be happy to tell you, to demonstrate to you, oh, I have done these things, right? So it's a lot of it is a little bit of conversational judo. I don't want to persuade you. I want you to persuade me. And if I can achieve that, doing this really smart thing that Aaron was describing in that messaging, I think that is a big part of how you might be successful in achieving that.
Yeah, very, very good.
So I've got a follow-up question to that, Ed. So, you know, I don't want to be persuading you. I want you to persuade me. Is that, has anything changed in that in the last sort of 3 years? Because 3 years ago, candidates were looking for jobs. And then 18 months ago, we were looking for them. We were trying to hire as many as we could, like last year, as many recruiters as possible. We had to convince them. We like, oh, sorry, your resume says recruiter on it. You're hired. That's what we had to do, is it not? There was a complete shift in power.
Yes, it was. And you know, I can't speak to that, unfortunately, Adam, in a meaningful way, because frankly, I didn't recruit recruiters during that crazy span of time, for which I'm honestly grateful right now. You know, given the lead-in conversation you and Hung had been having, right? I imagine it probably is impacting it in some meaningful way, but the fact of the matter is, it's you still need to be able to engage the thing that drives people to do this crazy thing that we do for a living.
Yeah. Tim, that question is probably more relevant to you than in that case. Like, we've had, you've had to go from a position of like probably being quite discerning about who you hire to, oh, you once got recruited? Fine, you come on in. Yeah. What was your experience?
I mean, again, like I said, we tend to hire people that haven't recruited because I actually don't like a lot of the bad habits that experienced recruiters bring, right? I think my take on the world right now is it's never been easier in the history of the world to find talent with helps of things like Candid ID and iSIMS and all the sourcing tools that are out there. We can find people. It's really hard for us to talk them into our average jobs, average pay, average benefits, average location, right? That's the difficult part of our job. So we have to be persuasive. We have to hire people who can be persuasive and gain trust really in a really, kind of robust way. And if you don't have that, like people always ask me, well, do you have to be an extrovert or an introvert to be a great recruiter? You can be either. Because my introverted friends are the best conversationalists I know. And that's really what that is. One-to-one, can you get somebody to trust you with one of the most important things in their lives, their career?
Yeah.
That's great. I think this has been a really great show. We have to call it there, folks, because we're end of time. But I think we've learned a lot here in terms of how we can figure out what is a good recruiter. I think you can. You can to a certain degree with some decent analysis on profile, how they put a document together. But in particular, the most important point is what I'm getting from all of you guys here is how they react to certain questions that you ask. And are they surfacing up the enthusiasm that will tell you that they're going to be the sort of lifelong learners that are going to be good recruiters for your business. Okay, folks, thank you so much for joining us. Aaron, Matthew, great to see you on the show. Thanks for coming back and being awesome, as you always are. We'll have to get you back on a regular. So you have a very good day, and we'll chat soon, Aaron.
All right.
Ed, great to see you, sir. Thanks for coming on to the show. Great to make your debut. If you're up for it, we'll bring you back also in a future episode.
Good to meet you, Ed.
Thank you very much.
I think it's the first time.
Likewise.
Yeah.
It is indeed. Thank you very much, Hung, and I would be certainly happy to do so.
Great stuff. And Tim, great to see you as ever, my friend. We're going to be seeing you in the UK, I believe.
July 6th and 7th, right? We got Disrupt HR and RecFest. I can't wait to get over there.
Get ready. So, Tim, quick plug, if you want to give it to Disrupt HR, what are you doing on the 6th of July?
So we're in downtown London at the Royal Institution, 6 p.m., 12 to 14, kind of, Disrupt HR, for those who don't know, are like 5-minute TED Talks, but with a little bit of a couple of rules thrown in there that make it, a little bit more difficult. But really just kind of great disruptive kind of conversation around talent acquisition, HR, all of those. Free drinks, some food, some networking. Show up. I guess it's not, is it free drinks if you buy the ticket? You have to pay for the speakers, but you get free drinks. Like, I don't know. You can drink $30 worth of alcohol. Come on. Come on down and see it. Yeah.
Come on down and see Tim Sackett. He is in London, a rare visit to London. He's going to be there before RecFest and at RecFest. So if you're going to either of those or you're not going to RecFest, just turn up in London and you'll see Tim and have a chat with him there. So Tim, great to have you on the show, mate.
When I was last at Disrupt HR London about 3 years ago, there was a lady who sang her whole 5 minutes. It was amazing. And it was funny as well. It was full of swearing and it was hilarious.
we need to get that person back on a highlight. She sounds amazing. Because when you first said singing, I thought, oh my god, it must be one of those tall, like cringe type affairs. But
ask Katrina Cole.
You mean like Bill Borman doing comedy, one of those things?
Yeah, I know. That type of thing.
All right, listen, we're calling it. Tim, we'll see you next time, sir.
See you guys.
That was great, wasn't it, mate?
Terrific. Loved it.
Yeah. Great show. Great to have you back. And all obviously, it kind of helps us build a picture as to what we want to do when we're recruiting recruiters. If we are still recruiting recruiters, the topics of these shows basically get out of date within weeks because the market shifts so quick. That's about it, folks. So Adam, listen, you have a good week and whatnot. I'll catch up with you soon.
Cheers.
Cool. All right, everyone, that's it. We'll be back next week, by the way. We're talking about how to source without LinkedIn. This is already got 270 people signed up to it. Make sure you register on Crowdcast to watch this show. We're going to be talking about how to recruit without using Big Blue. I did some research on LinkedIn. It turned out from a sort of recruiters, and it turned out something like 80% of all recruiters have a LinkedIn recruiter license or access to it. What happens if you don't have access? Have you got other stuff to do? We're with Balazs Porokhai, we're with Ala Pavlova. We're going to bring more cool people on the show, people who think outside the box, and it's going to be really intense. Consider it some great sourcing training, basically. So follow the channel if you're interested in this, and make sure you register on the show for next week. Okay, that's about it. I'll see you next week. Thanks for watching.